Over billions of years, ancient fish evolved to walk on land, reptiles transformed into birds that fly, and ape-like primates evolved into humans that walk on two legs, talk and write, and occasionally host radio shows. For more than a century, paleontologists have traveled the globe to find fossils that show how such change has happened. We have now arrived at a remarkable moment. Prehistoric fossils coupled with new DNA technology have given way to the tools to answer some of the basic questions of our existence. How do big changes in evolution happen? Is our presence on Earth a product of mere chance? This new science reveals a multi-billion year evolutionary history filled with twists and turns, trial and error, accident and innovation. Now, Neil Shubin gives us a lively and accessible account of the great transformation in the history of life on Earth in his book, Some Assembly Required, decoding 4 billion years of life from ancient fossils to DNA. He is the Robert R. Bensley Professor of Biology and Anatomy at the University of Chicago, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Neil to the program this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's very nice to have you on the program. This is a fascinating book, and obviously it's a huge subject. I'm curious as to how you came at it from this particular lens of looking at these new technologies and what they show us of what has happened in evolution.
Yeah, I come at it as a working scientist who trained as a paleontologist for years, who's led expeditions to both polar regions, Antarctica as well as the Arctic, you know, in search of some of the fossils you were just talking about, some of the earliest creatures to walk on land, for instance. And my team and I had discovered back in 2004 in rocks about 375 million years old, one of the earliest fish to walk on land. It had fins with arm bones inside, wrists and fingers, stubby fingers. You know, so I approached it that way. And then, but I've been living as a paleontologist during this time where we have a revolution in genomic technologies, in molecular biology, that tells us the structure and working of DNA and all the molecules that it uses to do its work. And that revolution, honestly, is something I've witnessed. You know, I witnessed it as a scientist, and then all of a sudden sort of shifted my lab in that direction, where now we can deploy expeditions to find fossils, along with studies of the DNA of living creatures, to ask these very, very big questions. You know, one thing that underlies all this is the last two decades have just been remarkable scientifically. We've had, you know, the Human Genome Project, where we can, you know, see the genome of humans. We've had genomes projects for thousands of other species. We now know the genomes of microbes, of viruses, of flies, of worms, of fish, of people. And we can begin to ask some very fundamental questions with that. Like, for instance, we know the genome of chimpanzees. We know the genome of people. Well, what are the genes that make humans distinctive? How do we compare genomes to other species, our genomes, to chimpanzees, to fish, and so forth? And we're getting at the actual structure and inner workings of DNA as it plays a role in both our development from egg to adult, you know, in embryology, but also in evolution over billions of years. Just a remarkable time to be a scientist.
With this flood of information and all of this data coming in, and allowing you to answer so many more questions, I assume it opens up a whole other, you still learn that there's a lot you still don't know, right?
Yeah, oh my gosh. I mean, the life of being a scientist is a life of exhilaration when you solve one question, but then excitement when you realize there are thousands of others that you never even appreciated the same way before. Yeah. You know, so for science, the quest of knowledge and, you know, and exploration into the unknown is never ending. And that applies very well here, because the more we know about the genome, the more new kinds of questions come up that we couldn't have asked before, you know. And honestly, we find things that sort of turn our heads in ways that are utterly surprising. You know, I mean, there are surprises in our genome now that we see it. I'll give you one example. You know, each of us has about 4 trillion cells in our body. That's a lot, you know, as adults.
Seems like a lot.
They're all packed in the right way.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a big number. I can't count that high. But, you know, in each of those cells, there's a 6-foot-long string of DNA wound up and packed tightly inside the cell, each cell. That's enormous. I mean, if you were to take, you know, the DNA out of our bodies, each of those 4 trillion cells, and lay it end to end, that would form a continual link from here almost to Pluto. That's how much genomic material we have inside of us. Yeah. And it's loaded with surprises. Let me give you some examples. The genes that contain the information to make proteins, that's only 2% of our genome. The other 98% has all this other stuff that is, some of it's incredibly important. Others is still loaded with mystery. One of the surprises is 8% of our genome are ancient viruses that invaded the genomes of our distant ancestors only to be knocked out. So we have 4 times more dead viruses in our genome than we do our own genes.
So
think about that for a second.
Yeah, I'm going to. And I'm going to ask you more about it. Of course, look, virus is the word of the day, you know, for the last several weeks. So what does that tell us about what a virus is, what it can do? I mean, as you point out in this book, that even our memory, one of the genes that's used in making our memories was in fact an ancient virus that invaded our genome. So what does that tell us about the nature of a virus?
Yeah, think about a virus. There's basically what a virus is a tiny, microscopic, super small, smaller than a bacterium even, piece of genetic material, just a piece of genetic material, not a lot of it, surrounded by a shell. Okay, essentially, that's what it is. Now, there are different kinds of viruses. There's a lot of variety and a lot of diversity there. But essentially what a virus is it's sort of at the margins, at the edge of what we define as living things, because it's kind of inert until it comes near a host cell. And it can be brought to a host cell in a lot of different ways, obviously, as we're lowing, you know, through contact through surfaces. Sometimes insects can carry them, droplets in the air, things like that. So when a virus enters the host's body, it can attach to its cells and then enter the cell and then commandeer the genetic machinery of the host cell to make copies of itself. And they can so basically the host cells become factories to make millions and millions and millions of viruses. In an enormous number of them. By some estimates, there are 10 to the 31, that is a 10 with 31 zeros after it, viruses in the ocean. That is actually more viruses in the ocean than there are stars in the observable universe. So, I mean, we are living in a sea of viruses. And throughout history, our species and others have lived in a balance, sometimes a war, with them. And so what they do is they've continually attacked the genome, enter the genome. Some do other things. But some of them have been knocked out. But some, as you say, have really surprised researchers, and particularly a team at the University of Utah who are working on a gene involved in making memories. It works in mice and people. It's a gene called ARC. And when they looked at the structure of the gene, it was, for all the world, the structure of a particular kind of virus. So when they looked at it and looked at the history of this, it became pretty clear that their data was supporting the hypothesis that at some time in the very distant past, an ancient virus attacked the genome of one of our distant ancestors, and that virus was later knocked out and repurposed, put to new uses, to play a role in this gene that forms memories. And the same thing is true with genes that are involved in the placenta during reproduction, and we're beginning to see the viral imprint of much of our own genome and genes as we get to more of these genome projects.
So what do we know about the repurposing? I mean, how does that happen so that it becomes that this evolution becomes good?
Yeah, that's a huge mystery. That's the big question. That's the million-dollar question. How does that happen? We don't know. All we can do is trace its history. There are lots of ideas how that might happen. There's a continual war inside our genome is so dynamic. Different parts of it are sort of jumping around. Some genes make copies of themselves and jump to other parts of the genome. Viruses are continually invading the genome. So think about our genome as not a static string of DNA, but it's roiling with activity. Okay, internally, where some parts of it just want to make copies of themselves and take over, others where viruses are attacking. And so in the context of that, there's all these different molecular tricks that are happening inside, where certain genes are being told to stop jumping, others take over a little bit more.
Sorry,
so understanding that sort of dynamic war, if you will, that's happening inside each of our cells is something I'd love, you know, that's something that's we're still trying to figure out how that happens.
when you're putting the book together, the name of the book is Some Assembly Required. So this is, we're not done, right? I mean, there's no end here.
But I sincerely hope not.
But I mean, even what's going on of a yeah. virus today could then be lay dormant and do something millions yeah. of years from now.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, if you look at the history, you know, one of the things, the kind of history I study, it really boggles your mind. Let's face it. I mean, I'm dealing with numbers that are in the billions of years or hundreds of millions of years. You know, the Earth is over 4.5 billion years old. Life is over 3.5 billion years old. You know, for most of the history of the planet, it's the history of viruses and microbes and things like that. You know, so that gives you a certain perspective on things. And no, the evolution continues. We're watching it, you know, today, you know, in terms of our balance with the other critters on the planet, the relationship between our genome and that of other genomes. I mean, I find it mind-boggling that a little tiny piece of genetic material, submicroscopic, surrounded by a little shell, can change the world, right? It can wreak havoc with our world, but it also, from sometimes, it can also be fuel for evolution.
The name of the new book is Some Assembly Required, Your Inner Fish and the Universe Within. Neil Shubin is the Robert Bensley Professor of Biology and Anatomy at the University of Chicago, elected to the National Academy of Sciences in 2011. Neil, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, the name of the book, Some Assembly Required, Decoding 4 Billion Years of Life from Ancient Fossils to DNA. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.